This is the Young Farmers Podcast. I'm Lindsay Lesher-Shute. California produces more food than any other state in the nation. In 2017, California farmers grew $45 billion in products. For perspective, the state closest, Iowa, produced $29 billion. Over a third of U.S. vegetables and two-thirds of U.S. fruits and nuts are grown in California. But as drought, wildfire, and the impacts of climate change increase across the state, how are the farmers doing? And how are the young farmers doing? Today, I'm talking with Mai Nguyen, Young Farmers California organizer based in San Diego, who is also a heritage grain farmer, activist, and former climate researcher. Mai authored the 2019 Young Farmers California Report for the National Young Farmers Coalition. It was just released.
Hi, I'm Emily Mickley Doyle, farmer at Sprout NOLA and organizer with the Greater New Orleans Growers Alliance. I've been a member of the National Young Farmers Coalition since 2013 because I believe that young people can be torchbearers for current and future generations in creating community-based food systems. For $35 a year, you can join too. In addition to being part of a bright and just future for agriculture in the United States, you'll also get discounts like 10% off high-mowing organic seeds and 15% off Rosie's workwear for women. To join, go to youngfarmers.org.
Can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Mai Nguyen. I'm the California organizer with the National Young Farmers Coalition.
And Mai, the California Report, what was your goal in writing this? What were you trying to find out?
I just want people to understand the lived experiences of farmers. It's very rare that we hear the whole story of what it's like to be a farmer in California, and particularly for young farmers, for farmers of color. So I wanted to be able to capture these experiences so that we have a fuller understanding of what's happening, who's feeding us, and also, you know, what's at stake as we're finding a declining population of young farmers.
Yeah, I mean, this is a California report, but this is also a national report. It has national consequences. More than a third of the country's vegetables and two-thirds of our fruits and nuts are grown in California. Did you feel like you were making that case in this report that this is not about just, you know, what's happening with our state, but this is really about the future of the nation?
I hope that anybody who goes to their grocery store and looks at any of the produce, that they'll recognize a lot of it comes from California. We have our name on all of this food. Mm-hmm. And so we are a major producer, but we're a year-round producer of so much of our country's food. So what happens to us has major effects for everybody else.
One of the things that struck me about this report, you really made an effort to go to areas of California that in fact are the most productive areas of California when it comes to agriculture, but seem to be the least represented. Why is there this disconnect between the most productive parts of California when it comes to agriculture and technical services and support?
So yeah, I went to the Central Valley and Southern California because those are areas where we don't often hear from farmers. We don't see a lot of technical support services. And I would hazard the guess that in the Valley and in Southern California, because we have a lot of agribusiness, and in Southern California, we have the predominance of a few crops, so citrus and avocado. Because of that kind of scale, that people haven't really sought out technical services. So for smaller scale farmers, there hasn't been as much of the development of technical services for them as much as there has been up north, or on the Central Coast. And in terms of going to those areas and who I was talking to, I think it's really key for us to hear from farmers in the Valley and especially small-scale and mid-sized farmers, because it's the area in California that is the most agriculturally productive, and yet those counties are also ranked the highest in rates of poverty and chronic diseases. So to really understand those conditions, why is there such this large gap between what is being produced and who actually is benefiting or profiting from what is being produced?
And does this, some of the geographic distribution of technical assistance, does this also play into one of your findings around the racial distribution of assistance? Individuals who identified as white reported no gaps in resources, whereas American Indian respondents received none of the listed resources, which included like help with soil management, business planning, crop planning, pest management, et cetera, irrigation and water management, financial management, long list of sort of basic areas of support for farmers. And then non-white respondents received assistance in some areas more than others. How does that actual geographic distribution play out in terms of technical assistance? Or is there a relationship between this racial distribution and geographic distribution?
I think that there is a correlation in terms of racial distribution and geographic distribution because of areas that people initially settled into, because of segregation, zoning. So you have this greater concentration of this racial ethnic diversity in the valley in particular. And then that relates back to technical assistance in terms of, it's trickier because it depends on which group you're referring to, but some groups might have faced historical discrimination. There might have simply been an initial language barrier, but at the same time, these institutions that provide technical assistance weren't reaching out to these farmers either. And over time, now we've just seen that there are even fewer technical service providers. We only have 4 small farm advisors for the whole state.
Through cooperative extension?
Yeah, through cooperative extension. And then that's where, at least in other areas, such as Northern California and the Central Coast, nonprofits have filled in.
So tell me about the young farmers that were part of this study. Who are they and what do they grow?
We had farmers, ranchers, beekeepers, and in terms of the farmers, they were often vegetable farmers, many of whom also had diversified operations, so had some livestock, or also cut flowers. And in terms of acreage, it ranged from like a half an acre to 3,000. So we really saw a wide range of land scales.
Did you say a quarter acre to 3,500 acres? I mean, it's... Did you find there are common threads and shared experiences between such a range of farmers and ranchers?
Yeah, I think the salient threads are everybody's facing climate change. They're all facing drought. Also, being able to make a living at farming. For those who are trying to hire employees on their farm, they're finding that there are fewer and fewer people with experience farming and who can remain reliable. And that, relates back to the cost of goods, right? It's if you can't pay people enough because you're not making enough from your products, it's a cycle where you're not really going to bring in a lot more farmers to support your own farm. A lot of other salient threads, common threads, are highlighted in the report. So I do hope that people delve into each topic to get sort of the rich stories that farmers have shared about why all these various topics are challenges and how they're related to each other.
Yeah, I really appreciate throughout the report the quotes that you incorporate. Some of the quotes that I pulled out that I sort of couldn't get out of my head after reading the report were around climate change. One of those quotes was, "The smoke from fires darkened the skies. When my starts were in a photosensitive period, many yellowed and withered. You can't unblock the sun." That was a vegetable farmer. And another one was saying, it's painful to harvest. My eyes sting and I can hardly breathe, but I have to harvest and make a living. What did farmers say about the impacts of climate change in this report? How do they relate climate change to some of the severe weather, the fires and drought that they are facing?
Yeah, so you know, a lot of the young farmers that I've met and talked to, what they're experiencing now was not the norm before.
Right. Yep.
It's not just about the timing and when things are happening. It's about the extreme kind of intensities of these different cycles of heat and rain. The flooding that's happening with rains that follow fires and with the fires that have destroyed not just farms and homes, but also conservation areas, zones where the plant life would have helped with storing water. With those areas being bare, it's harder to do so and have that important groundwater recharge, as well as ensuring that the water doesn't just run off to flood the rest of the farmlands. People are, such as in one quote where they're talking about trying to harvest, there's the acute effects when they're trying to harvest and they have something in the ground that needs to be plucked. And then there are also those issues of the long-term impacts that I think the rest of the society doesn't really see, right? Which is, if a plant didn't grow during its photosensitive period, then that farmer can't put that plant in the ground. It's food that's just not even being produced at all. And that's a loss to the farmer that the rest of society may not see, mm-hmm. right? But the farmer has to take that hit. And in that way, I see that across the board, farmers are really experiencing climate change on behalf of society first. They're taking the economic and emotional hits before everybody else.
That's so true. And I just wonder long term, how is this impacting the farmer community, having lost, you yourself lost land to fire. How do you feel like that sense of loss, that sense of panic and just trauma, how did you get a sense of that in your conversations with farmers? I'm just wondering, how do you just start again when there are such risks at play right now and farmers are experiencing such devastating loss?
Yeah, I wish I had the chance to go deeper into those conversations with farmers for the report. But just within my own, farming networks and community, there's certainly a sense of looming, persistent anxiety. But at the same time, all the farmers I talk to are incredibly resilient. They went into farming knowing that it's challenging. And now, the stakes are higher when you're putting things in the ground, and there's a greater sense of uncertainty. But also, I think that uncertainty has really fed into a greater sense of conviction, because, we know from all these studies, from the IPCC reports, UN reports, that the number one impact of climate change is food insecurity. And so we need people to continue to produce food, to know how to adapt to these changing conditions, to build the ecological and emotional resilience to do that. And, all these farmers have expressed that, they are up for that task.
Another issue, Mai, that came up as one of the top needs of farmers in California was access to land. What are the challenges that farmers are experiencing? No surprise on this one, unfortunately.
Right. No surprises. In California, just some areas are play a larger role, right? So the same themes, but just some areas are exacerbated. Our land is in high demand, and farming is not as lucrative as the other industries in which it's competing for land use.
Like
like Silicon Valley.
Small farmer versus Google. Yeah. It's
right. Yeah. And then also the people who are coming to work for those industries. We have people who are being displaced from San Francisco because I believe last year or 2 years ago, they announced that a middle-class income is $1 million. So if you're not making $1 million, moving, an hour north to where there are a lot of farms, then it's going to be cheaper. For young farmers, beginning farmers, they tend to be smaller. So they need to be closer to population centers where they could possibly sell direct to market. And that's becoming challenging, again, related to housing demands and cost of living, just even for people trying to live in those cities, let alone the farmland surrounding those areas.
Did you get a sense of the breakdown in terms of the farmers looking to sell into a national wholesale market versus those who are looking to sell directly to consumers in an urban center at a farmer's market or via CSA or restaurants or the like?
Within the listening sessions, that was certainly something that came up. Most of the people tried to diversify their sales avenues. So many of them were doing both wholesale and direct market. In the listening sessions, I didn't talk to anyone who's selling to national markets, but they also weren't necessarily clear as to where their products were going. Most people, if they're doing wholesale, were selling to a distributor. Some were selling to, local food hubs, and so they did know who their customers were. But the farmers who were like in the Central Valley or San Diego, they were selling to distributors.
So you say in the report, for farmers who are further from their markets, there needs to be reliable and affordable storage and distribution infrastructure. And, I know with your grain operation on your farm, you had a huge loss this season. Do you think that is sort of in part the result of this lack of appropriate infrastructure?
Certainly, yeah. And for it to be accessible, For myself, I need to clean grain. And for those who are not grain farmers, that once you harvest grain, say wheat, in an organic system, there will be weeds. And so that's green matter that needs to be separated out from the wheat. If it sits together in the summertime, that's just a simple equation for mold and contamination. If I had a cleaner on site, then I could do that separation right away and, put the grain in storage. But the nearest cleaner that would take my size, so off of 40 acres, the nearest cleaner is 4 hours away, and they usually take, semi-truck loads. So my account is thus less valuable. My fee to the cleaning service is going to be less than someone doing a semi-truck load. And so, I become deprioritized. And as a result, with my grain sitting there, then, that whole lot rotted.
Your crop was waiting to be cleaned?
Correct. Yeah.
So it was at the facility. It was there.
It was there. And losing the entire thing means just you're losing your whole year's worth of work and your whole farm income. In relating it to other farmers who are also trying to, diversify what they're growing for environmental or market reasons, it's important to have, seed cleaners and be able to save your seed stock. Those are just some of the kinds of equipment infrastructure that I think needs to be addressed alongside the means of getting it out to markets without spoilage.
I mean, it gets in the way of this, idea of resilience and adaptation, right? To change if, it's so difficult to grow, to experiment, right? And even grow at a smaller scale to see what might work best. That is so frustrating, Mai, and I am terribly sorry to hear about your loss from last season. You're actually expanding your operation this year. You're farming in 2019.
I am farming in 2019. One, in terms of addressing infrastructure, there's room for collaboration by creating farmer cooperatives where farmers are owning infrastructure together and sharing the costs of owning that equipment. And then also, I guess I am going big, maybe still not as big as, you know, the other folks who are taking their goods to the silos. But, you know, I'm seeing if that can at least enable me to have a greater stock to split up and send to different places for cleaning, or just have a greater volume.
So, Mai, what are you hoping as an outcome of this report? We have now, Young Farmers Coalition has two members of the team in California. Ernesto is in Sacramento doing some policy work this session. Do you think there's opportunities to solve some of those challenges that were identified by farmers?
Yeah, I think what's exciting about California is that we have a very food literate state. People who are very enthusiastic about knowing about food, cooking, and I hope that this report is a way for those food enthusiasts to really understand where their food is coming from. I think this is an opportunity for people to have a deeper understanding as well as to take action. So I think there's that piece, right? There's a lot of, you know, food advocacy organizations, people who want to address food justice. And at the core, you know, if we're going to talk about food, we really need to talk about farmers. And then lastly, the other piece about our California work. So Ernesto, as our policy associate, you know, we're working to sponsor two bills this year. One is a land access bill, and that one would create a program to help finance farmland for farmers of color, socially disadvantaged farmers. And I think that's really key for land access, right, and affordability. The other bill is AB 838, and that one addresses technical assistance. So this bill would expand the number of small farm advisors in California, as well as put a director sort of above all of them. Additionally, we are really lacking in pathways to becoming a farmer through formal education. So this technical assistance bill would fund nonprofit agricultural training programs, as well as mentorship programs with on-farm apprentices, really mimicking, echoing the Colorado workforce bill that the National Young Farmers Coalition pushed for. And so if the report can help inform the need for those bills, then, you know, making those wins so soon after the report release would be, you know, incredibly exciting.
And we will be sure to link to both of those bills and opportunities to take action in the show notes for today's show. There are clearly many very significant obstacles for new, young, beginning farmers in California. But I'm wondering, you're still doing it, right? Like, what is the reason to farm in California? What are some words of encouragement or signs of hope that you might have uncovered through this process?
Yeah, every farmer I've spoken to has their convictions and sense of values that keep them going despite all the challenges. So my own personal reasons for this is that I understand how important culturally relevant food is. For me, you know, it's Vietnamese food and Vietnamese crops that nourished, you know, me growing up. It's what my mom ate. It's what my grandmother ate. It's what my ancestors ate. And it's the food that, you know, we had really adapted to in terms of our environment. And it's also related to ecological diversity, you know, crops that can be grown in different situations. And I think that as we experience climate change, it's critical that we have that kind of seed and crop diversity. So it's both for sort of these personal and cultural reasons as well as ecological reasons that I find it important to farm.
Mai, thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you for being on the show today. Thanks for this report, and we'll talk soon, I'm sure. Mai, thank you for all the great work that you're doing in California, and congratulations on your new baby. You can read the 2019 California Report on our website, youngfarmers.org, and we'll also link to it in the show notes. It's a super interesting and informative report. Everyone should check it out. There are also gorgeous images of California farmers. They're so moving. Youngfarmers.org to download it. We also have a new review this week. Thank you, Ben Thelen. He says, "This pod has really helped me understand the issues, challenges, and opportunities that may well be in my future. Thank you for all your work." Ben, thank you for writing us a review. And we appreciate all of the feedback. So if you have not written us a review already, all you have to do is go to your iTunes. You can give a star rating if you don't feel like typing something in your phone. We love all sorts of feedback, and it really does help us do better work. It also helps more people find the show. Thanks to Hannah Beal, our wonderful editor, Jessica Manley, our producer, and our podcast intern, Maya. Talk to you next week.